Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the communicative voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello there.
You have communicated something to me and it's kind of ruined my Christmas and New Year, but you know, I'll let you tell the story.
More than happy to tell the story, and I love the fact that this has come in. So, of course, in last week's show, we spoke about Troy Deeney penalties, and you gave an opinion, which was an emotional opinion, and one that, at the time, we discussed and didn't think too much of. We were then sent evidence to prove you wrong, and it was actually the Aston Villa goalkeeper coach, Neil Cutler, who did make contact with me personally and with the show to actually prove the point that they did do their research, and the fact that Tom Heaton dived was based on their research.
So he dived to his right because of research that Neil Cutler, the goalkeeping coach at Aston Villa, and the stats suggested that he should dive right.
So therefore now I assume there's only really one thing that has to happen, which is I would suggest an apology from you. I mean, it's up to you whether you want to apologise, how much you want to grovel. That's your call. But I think the only thing you can really do at this point is just a simple apology. Apology to Tom Heaton, who also listens, by the way. Apology to Neil Cutler, and then we can move forward with the show.
Okay, so first and foremost, I was not criticising each one. By the way, this is a separate note. I'm going to slightly derail the whole thing
here. It's just one word.
Just going to derail it.
One word, sorry.
There is a separate note here in that when you criticise or you pick something out of a striker's game or a midfielder's game or a defender's game, primarily you're just doing it to that player, aren't you? Because, you know, there's no midfielder coach, right, who gets annoyed because he's set up his midfielder to play a certain way. I guess you could maybe look at the manager, but that generally doesn't happen. With a goalkeeper, it's two-pronged, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Because you're saying something about the goalkeeper, but then the goalkeeper coach will go, well, hang on a second, I'm not having that.
Especially when it comes to penalties, because that is a team effort. That is a decision, more often than not, that's made before the game starts as to what you're going to do on the penalty. This being a perfect case in point that, and in fairness, what I would say is your opinion, a lot of people would share that opinion, oh, Troy Deeney tends to go down the middle, but actually, we were sent through a graph, effectively, that shows you exactly where the last 20-odd penalties that Troy Deeney has taken, where they've been. So you can understand fully, having seen that, why they've decided to make the decision, a joint decision between Neil Cutler, between Tom Heaton, to dive to his right. It just so happens, of course, that Troy Deeney did go down the middle and it didn't work out.
Well, in which sense I was actually
right. So you're not going to apologise, are you?
Listen, it made perfect sense, and he alluded to the fact, didn't he, that not many successive penalties have gone down the middle.
That's right.
So two in a row. Yeah. My only argument here is that I will stick by what I initially said, and that Troy Deeney wasn't particularly 100% match fit, maybe lacking a little bit of confidence, and therefore would just naturally whack it straight down the middle.
Just one word, Matt.
But I put my hands up, Neil Cutler. Thank you for ruining the start of 2020 for me, but I am indeed very sorry. Is that better, Richard?
Fantastic. I've made my day. This has made a brilliant start to my year.
I feel like I've fallen into the cliche of people who criticise goalkeepers. I'll be talking about the near post next. But that was great. Enjoyed that. We enjoy the feedback. I love everything about that, to be fair. And if you want to pull me up on anything else that I've said, or probably Richard more, to be fair, it's very easy to get in touch. hello@goalkeepersunion.net, @GKUnion or Twitter, or just WhatsApp Rich. That seems to work. Okay, back on with the show. It was FA Cup third round weekend. By the way, just a very quick note to say that we've had a few messages in as well to say that we haven't put out an interview podcast in recent weeks. Just having a little break. It's a little break for Christmas and the New Year. We've got plenty lined up, plenty we've already recorded.
Several in the can.
Several in the can.
Yes, we do.
So they'll be coming out as and when, but just thought we'd let the others breathe for a bit, give you all a bit of a break.
Indeed. We've got a few really good guests lined up as well. In fact, we'll be speaking to Paul Clements very soon, the goalkeeper coach at Huddersfield, and a couple of others as well, top pros that we'll be keeping under wraps, but we've got some big ones lined up for the coming months.
Good stuff. Well, like I said, it was FA Cup third round. A chance, as always, like we see in the first round and second round too with lower league clubs, for goalkeepers who perhaps haven't had enough minutes this season, second choice, third choice, in some cases, fourth choice goalkeepers stepping between the sticks and picked up some of the best. David Button, good friend of the show, good friend of yours. A decent performance for Brighton against Sheffield Wednesday. Great save from Stephen Fletcher. but not to be undone by a deflected free kick.
Indeed. Yeah, look, excellent performance. There's a few like this. Jonathan Bond's another good example where limited opportunities, but when they step in, ordinarily do the business. Certainly David Button. I don't think he's had a poor performance for Brighton when he's played. Made an excellent save to his right first half. So athletic, powerful, up into the top corner. Made a really good save as well at his near post. An awkward one from out wide that's moving all over the place and no chance on the goal. So he'll be pleased to get some minutes under his belt. The frustrating thing, and this is the same for so many second choice goalkeepers, is that you wait so long for a cup competition, and when you are knocked out in your first game when it's nothing to do with you, it can feel, look, you know, if Matt Ryan stays fit, there's a chance that David Button doesn't play again this season, which is, it's a tough thing to take, and that's where the frustration will lie when it comes to these cup competitions. It's always nice when you can get through a couple of rounds knowing that you might have games ahead.
Yep, Daniel Backman at Watford, his debut there, of course. Ben Foster, the definite number one at Watford. An unsteady performance, I'd say, from Backman. They were 3-0 up at the time, of course. Tranmere did pull it back to 3-all, incredible result for them. But he'd handled, it looked like it was outside the area. Then he flapped, sorry, cliche, for the second goal.
Yeah, I hate the word flapped. But no, do you know what? This isn't just Backman. I think there was a few, and we're going to touch on a few in this show, in that you don't play for a long period of time. The interesting thing for me, and I had this very conversation with someone yesterday, was that if you're injured for a year and you don't play and you come back, you're given a little bit of leeway because, oh, you've been injured for a year. You know, it's going to take you a bit of time to get used to it, to get used to the pace of the game and the players you're playing with. It's exactly the same if you haven't been in the team for a long period of time. Now, for Backman, as you mentioned, he's been on the periphery for a long period of time. He hasn't played many games of football. Then all of a sudden you step into what is a difficult game. And Tranmere, look, I know they're a lower league opposition, but Watford obviously much changed lineup. It was always going to be a very difficult game, and you're expected to step in and produce a high quality performance. And you could see he looked a little bit nervy, as you mentioned, decision making, and the cross that he's come to catch and it squirmed through his hands, which, look, and it's one of them as well that sometimes that gets cleared and we don't even see it on the highlights. I had one on my debut that went through my hands and luckily went over the bar, but it's forgotten because you end up winning the game or you end up not conceding from that very moment. It gets instantly forgotten, unfortunately, in his case. And it was a basic one. We've all done it. You go to catch the cross, it's effectively just squirmed through his hands. He's mistimed it ever so slightly. Absolutely punished to the maximum. And unfortunately for Watford, that means a replay, and it wasn't the victory that it should have been, having been 3-0 up.
Well, a team that won't be getting a replay is Stoke City. They lost at Griffin Park to Brentford, Euro Club, of course. Adam Davies finally getting a chance between the sticks. It was 1-0, a Marcondes free kick that floated high and over Adam Davies. Now, I said to you before we came on that when I watched this, it didn't actually register with me. It was only afterwards that I saw the quotes from the manager Michael O'Neill, and also a bit of a scathing article in the Stoke Sentinel, which is the local rag up there, about Adam Davies and the fact that this shows that they shouldn't get rid of Jack Butland in January. I thought that was harsh.
No, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, look, I was actually at this game, and it's one of them. Again, look, we'll all experience this. Ball from out wide, cross from out wide. You've got the first guy comes to take it, fakes. The second guy takes it. Now, what's ended up happening? It's a minor error. It's effectively he's taken half a step forward without fully assessing the flight. And in fairness, it's beating him high up into the top corner behind him. And it's a whipped ball in. You know, I know you used the word floated. It was really whipped in. So, look, is it an error? He'd hold his hands up and say, yes, it was. It wasn't horrendous. And in fairness, after that, he was fine. You know, his kicking was very good. His decision makers were made a really good save late on. So general performance was absolutely fine. We're talking one moment in a game, but it's interesting. And this is exactly why we do this show, because articles like that, nonsensical articles like that, where this is the first game he's played for the club, goes back to the point we made before. He's gone 8 months without playing a proper game of football, and you're expected to step in. The in-form team, by the way, Brentford, in the Championship at the moment and looking very likely to make playoffs, maybe even top two if they carry on this good run of form. So it's a really tough game to come into. So to write an article like that, it's just absolute nonsense, especially given the fact, look, I believe Jack Butland is a top, top quality goalkeeper, but you're telling me he hasn't made a mistake this season? Like, he's made several, and he'll hold his hands up himself. So it's just, look, it's just to fill column inches, I'm sure. From Adam Davis' point of view, look, he showed last season just how good he is. Goalkeeper of the season by a country mile in League One at Barnsley. But in the same way that we're going to speak about other goalkeepers that have stepped into the FA Cup, so we mentioned Backman at Watford, they're all top quality goalkeepers. But like anything, if you don't play week in, week out, I had this myself, sometimes it can take a few games to get up to the pace of the game. And before you know it, you play 4 or 5 games, suddenly it just becomes second nature again. And you don't make these kind of errors because it just becomes normal again. And that's the most difficult thing about being a number two.
Another number two, Adrian, of course, coming in for Alisson, made some very good saves against Everton, kept them in the game. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Mason Holgate and Richarlison.
Do you know what? A brilliant example, and this is where the results sometimes can do you a favour, because we talk about Adrian, he's done brilliantly when he stepped in. But again, he made mistakes early on, a couple of glaring mistakes early on. However, Liverpool won those games, so no one mentions them. So that's the other bit where parts that are out of your control can do you a massive favour when you do win. Now, in fairness to him, and I have to give him all the credit in the world, because especially when you see West Ham having had the issues that they've had, every time he stepped in for Liverpool, he has been very, very good, very solid. You can see he's loving the experience, loving the environment. And you're right, he was star man for me in this game, made several key saves in the first half, a really young Liverpool team against the first team in Everton. I mean, Everton will be so disappointed not to at least get a result from this one. But yet again, Adrian has really staked his claim now as being arguably one of the best number twos in the Premier League.
A great save as well in that game from Jordan Pickford a Divock Origi shot.
If you watch it again, positioning was very good. He's light on his toes. He sets well, and it is. He gets himself down to his right-hand side. One of the things I was impressed with most as well is the angle of the parry, the fact that he has just put it around the post. It's the kind of one that sometimes you see people parry back out. They're so concerned about getting a firm hand to it, but he has almost just directed it, deflected it around the post, and it was top, top class.
The game involving Middlesbrough and Spurs. Now, I spoke to you about this before as well, and I know that perhaps a lot of goalkeepers might disagree with me here, but I look at both of those goals. The first one from Ashley Fletcher against Paolo Gazzaniga. Now, that is the type of goal that I always look at and think, it's too easy. Like, Fletcher's not had to test the goalkeeper in any way. He's, for most part, as he's approaching, his head is down. He's literally just hit it. He's not tried to dink it. He's not tried to hit the corners. He's just hit it, and it's deflected off Gazzaniga and gone in.
So for me, this is one where everyone's got different techniques when it comes to one-on-ones. Now, the one that I champion is that you stay kind of deep to begin, so maybe 6 yards. I always say that because I don't say come 12, 13 yards. Reason being, you leave too much space behind you. So it's so easy then to go round a goalkeeper when they're 12 to 15 yards out. So I suggest that if you know they're bearing down on you one-on-one, start about 6, but then you have to watch how much control they've got over the football. So almost stare at the football, be so intent. And the moment they take that touch and you think you can come and maybe challenge them, you sprint off your line, you dive head first, and you try and get there 50-50 and make the save. That's my thing. Now, if they've got good control, at some point you have to advance. Now, what you do, the moment of impact, like we saw, that's the moment where you try and nick 2, 3, 4 yards, and then you produce your spread, whatever your spread is. Joe Hart's always been brilliant at this, to be fair. Peter Schmeichel's a classic one back in the day. Now, if you time that to perfection, there is a moment. The moment that the ball is struck, if you were to take a snapshot, what position is your body in? What shape have you managed to create? Are there any gaps in your shape? Is there any holes that you've allowed them to go through? That's my only criticism with Gazzaniga here, and I don't think he nicks those 2 yards for a start. I think at the moment of impact, he hasn't created a particularly big shape. I think he could have nicked an extra yard and been a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit more aggressive. It's not an error, I have to say that.
No, it's not an error. I'm not saying that it is an error.
Yeah, but the point is, and I do agree with you, to be fair, the point is that you can be slightly more effective. And I think there are goalkeepers out there that would have dealt with that particular situation a little bit differently and arguably a little bit more effectively.
Could Thomas Mejias, he was in for his first game of his second spell at Middlesbrough, done better with the Lucas Moura header?
So this is a different situation. He actually did a lot of it very, very well. So he made the decision to stay on his line, which was good. He gave himself reaction time, which was good. It's a header from about 5 yards. He was a little bit too low, just a slight bit too low. And I think that his hand maybe ever so slightly too low, which made it hard to get his hand up. It's more of a reaction issue and a coordination issue, because actually it is a savable shot. Like, again, not an error because of where it's headed from and how close he was. But again, I think certain goalkeepers, someone like a David De Gea being a great example, he would have made the same decision. He would have dropped to his line, and with the reflexes he's got, it would have been slightly more upright and he would have made this save. So that's a good example where I think the decision was right. I think the positioning was perfect. I think it's just a case of getting your set right and then being able to move quickly, good reactions, and getting a firm contact, firm, solid contact on the ball and a big parry away. Unfortunately, when you look at it again, he's in a slightly awkward position and his hand doesn't get to where he wants it to go. And you can tell he's disappointed when it goes in, because he knows that the header wasn't right in the corner. Had he have had a slightly better set position, then I don't think he makes it comfortably, but I certainly think he can make the save.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Well, this week's keeper capers is Connor Ripley, sadly, of Preston in their 4-2 defeat to Norwich. And
just
this
quickly,
is a tough one.
Sadly of Preston? That's a bit harsh on Preston.
Crikey, you're trying to pull me out for anything now. This is like the worst show I've ever
today.
Done.
Sorry.
Totally derailed.
Go on.
But no, you're correct. Yes, all right. Connor Ripley of Preston. Sadly,
there
we go. Making a few errors in their defeat to Norwich. And this was a tough day for him.
It was. Although, by the way, I did live in Preston for a year, so I can concur that, no, jokes. It was a lovely time in Preston I had when I was up there. No, it was a tough day for him, really tough. And I felt for him for several reasons. You know, it goes back. It's the same conversation we've had throughout this show in that you don't play for a long period of time. The other part that I'll add to that as well is that the preparation is so much different when you haven't played for a long period of time. If you're playing week in, week out, you just approach each one the same way. You still get a little bit nervous, but maybe not quite so much as you ordinarily would, because it's just normal. You go in, you know the environment, you know the pace of the game, etc., etc. When you haven't played for ages, you will be a little bit more nervous. You're going to feel a little bit off the pace. Conor Ripley hasn't played much football for Preston North End. It's as simple as that. Conor Ripley is a top, top goalkeeper. You look at the mistakes in isolation. So no chance in the first. Second goal actually makes a good save. Gets back in, never gets properly set, it's fair to say, and it's a bit of a squirmy one. The camera angle, unfortunately, we can't fully dissect it and assess it, but you can kind of see what's happened. He's made the save, got himself back, scampered back, set. We actually, funnily enough, saw a similar one with Jack Butland at Preston earlier on in the season, where makes a save, gets back, sets, but you never properly get set because you're still moving, and unfortunately it's squirmed under him. It was the one after that where the ball's come through, makes a brilliant decision to come, comes a long way off his line, and then it's just a poor execution on the kick. Again, it's one of these moments where you realise you poor execution, the guy's controlled it brilliantly and struck it from about 40 yards. That's the moment where you're just praying that they don't nail it. And he absolutely nails it, puts it into the goal, and then it's one of those days already. You've had two goals that you know you could have done slightly better, and then to top it off, gives away a penalty for the last one. And it's a tough lesson. Look, again, we've all had games like it. I'm sure that he'll be hurting since. The key thing with anybody that makes these kind of mistakes is go back. Can you assess it while taking emotions out of it? Because I made the point earlier, they end up going on and winning the game. It's that kind of thing that can be forgotten. You end up losing the game, you get knocked out of the cup. You might not get another game this season because, of course, he isn't their regular. Have you got the ability to assess the game without having emotion attached to it and take the learnings that have been given from that game and be able to move forward? Or do you assign a bad lesson to it and get down about it, get a bit negative, allow it to affect the next few weeks, suddenly your training's affected and so on and so forth? He just needs to pick his head up, go into training as it were any other day and move forward.
He's an interesting case, Conor Ripley, isn't he? By the way, around a year to the day, he was on loan at Accrington, made a great save in the FA Cup third round from Freddie Sears. So contrasting fortunes this time out. That was actually his last game on loan at Accrington, eventually moved on to Preston, of course, from Middlesbrough. And he's 26 now. He'd been at Middlesbrough for the majority of his career, various loan spells. He's made four appearances this season, all in the Cup. What does he do now, Conor Ripley, in terms of his career? Because is he just someone destined to be a number two, or does he eventually think, okay, I'm going to make my breakthrough? Because like I said, he's 26 now.
Yeah, no, he'll have made that move. You mentioned he did very, very well at Accrington, it's fair to say. And he'll have made that move with the thinking being, and so many goalkeepers do this. We spoke about David Button earlier. You know, he didn't move to Brighton to be a number two. But the thought process is, do you then go to Brighton as a number two, knowing that if you break in, you're a number one in the Premier League? Same here for Conor Ripley. Do you know what? It didn't look like he's going to get an opportunity at Borough. Okay, this club are signing me. They like me. Financially, I'm sure it's worthwhile as well. Right, if I go there, this is my opportunity. At some point, I will force my way in and I will be a number one in the championship. So that's the mindset. Now, at some point, that mindset may change because you're right, he's 26. He's got another 10 years potentially. And you're trying to plot your way to become a number one in the Premier League, I would assume, for most goalkeepers. There isn't a right or wrong way. That's the truth. And sometimes it can just come out the blue. You know, Ainsley Pearce being a good example at Middlesbrough. Sometimes it can just happen without you realising it. I had it myself when I was at Watford and I was third choice. And within the space of a week, Mark Poom goes down in one game. The next game, Scott Loach goes down. And I find myself in the team. You know, it can happen so quickly. But similarly, there's a Peter Enkelman at Blackburn, back up to Brad Friedel, played one game in 4 years. Brad Friedel gave him one cup game. You know, Brad just wanted to play every single game. So there is no right or wrong way. There is an element of luck. And I think this is key. If a goalkeeper doesn't have a loss of form, doesn't get sent off, doesn't get injured, you might be waiting a long period of time, but it could happen the next day, which is why you need to be ready every second. And I think from Conor Ripley's point of view, I'm sure he thinks about it all the time, and so many goalkeepers are in the same position, and it's tough to know because, look, that's the other one that I had personally, was I left Watford to go to Brentford. What happens 3 games into the following season? Well, I didn't get in the Brentford team for one, and Scott Loach gets dropped by Watford. And there's part of me sat there thinking, I've just left Watford. They offered me a contract. I probably would have been a number one in the championship now. and I looked at it, I was a number two in League One. You know, so sometimes you make the right decision for the right reasons and get the wrong outcome.
Just quickly.
Yeah.
Connor Ripley made his pro debut.
He did.
As a sub.
Okay.
Always the same.
Yeah.
2011 for a game against Reading for Middlesbrough. Seems to be the case.
Well, most do. Most do. You're just thrown into it. I was probably one of the exceptions where mine was, I say, planned to an extent. But yeah, most it is exactly that. And then you've got that small opportunity, that window of opportunity where you just hope that all the work you've done in all the years previous pays off in that moment and you hope that things go your way.
A couple of playing out from the back scenarios as well. We won't go into them too much because we've done it plenty of times, but it just goes to show, doesn't it? I'm going to start totting these up, by the way, as the weekends pass by. Josh Vickers for Lincoln against Sunderland, complete shambles of playing out the back. He tried to chip it over Chris Maguire as they were playing around. Chris Maguire gets his head on the ball and then Lyndon Gooch heads it in. At least we're getting variation now, I suppose, with this. I can allude to Claudio Bravo in City's game, not the FA Cup, a few days before that, I think on New Year's Day against Everton. Great bit of skill, but then a poor pass. Everton go and score. David Raya for Brentford against Millwall. That ended up in a goal. Coventry, Marco Morosi against Bristol Rovers at the weekend. All trying to play out from the back. On that occasion, it ended up in a penalty and they conceded.
Look, it's risk and reward. And I think it's going to take a while before we get the balance right. And the thing is, for those few mistakes you mentioned, we don't mention the hundreds, if not thousands, of passes that have been completed, which have led to positive attacks, which have led to chances, which have led to goals. So, look, I don't think it's a case of, okay, don't play out. Let's go back to old school days. Just go long, hit areas, because that's not the answer either. I think it's just, and it's tough, by the way, because we see it from this perspective that the camera gives us. And it looks so simple. Everyone's got so much space. Trust me, when you're stood there in goal and you're trying to play through two attackers maybe to a sitting midfielder, it's one of the most nerve-wracking things, trying to thread it through the eye of the needle. So, but at the same time, you've been told to do that because the managers want to keep possession of the ball. And if you are too safe, which I think I was for a long period of time, yeah, you don't ever get blamed for goals, but at the same time, you're not that beneficial to your team. There is a happy medium somewhere. I think we're still trying to find it.
Okay, a few more bits to discuss, to dissect. Joe Hart with a rare start for Burnley. They won 4-2 against Peterborough. Nothing really to talk about particularly in that game. However, rumours are circling that Joe Hart might just well be on the radar of Aston Villa. Of course, Tom Heaton is now out until the end of the season. Terrible news for him. But Joe Hart potentially, maybe a move to Aston Villa, maybe someone else. What do you think?
I mean, look, if they were to go down that road, then certainly you look at the options out there. We've said a lot about Joe Hart, but he's got the experience. He's got a fantastic CV. No doubt he'd be absolutely desperate to play. And he didn't do that badly when he played for Burnley last season. I think it's easy to look at it. And on the face of it, they were conceding. They were down the wrong end of the table. And things picked up second half of the season. But at the time, I remember when Joe Hart was dropped, it was a bit of a surprise because actually he had been pretty solid and he'd been one of their better players, I felt, at the time. It just so happened that when Tom Heaton did come into that Burnley team, of course, it was a very positive thing for the team and they moved forward and they did very well. And then you've got Nick Pope, who is younger, up-and-coming, fantastic goalkeeper. Of course, he was always likely to be the number one with Tom Heaton moving on, and he hasn't really slipped up yet. So Joe's been there waiting, but at the same time, no doubt he's desperate to play. So great for him that he did get a game at the weekend. Just to touch on Tom, I saw the injury itself, and it was kind of innocuous. And I was watching the game live, and I remember seeing it, and he went down. You thought, oh, it can't be anything too serious. Then suddenly you realise that, look, this is something a little bit more than that. Absolutely gutted for him because I know that the Aston Villa fans have really taken to him. He's been one of their better players again this season. I've had quite a bit of back and forth with him since the injury, and obviously he's devastated, as you could imagine. So hopefully it's one where he can make a full recovery. It's such a shame as well because obviously it wasn't that long ago that he had the shoulder injury. So to be struck with two pretty serious injuries in such a short space of time is incredibly unfortunate.
Yeah, incredibly unfortunate. And he's going to be a massive loss for Aston Villa.
Well, he will, especially when Jed Steers out as well at the moment. So they have got a decision to make because they're in a perilous position at the moment. Tom Heaton, you felt, and I've made this point on this show and I've made this point on the radio show that we do several times, in that when you're going into the second half of the season, you've got a bit of a relegation fight in your hand. Well, who better than someone who went through the exact same thing last season in Tom Heaton? So to not have him, I am concerned for Villa.
Yep, another team in claret and blue, West Ham. No surprises, two clean sheets on the bounce under David Moyes, but with Lucas Fabianski in goal. However, Darren Randolph is not completed yet, but it looks like he's going to complete a £4 million move from Middlesbrough back to his old club.
Yeah, good signing. Look, for me, Randolph has been the standout goalkeeper in the Championship the last two seasons. Certainly the stats would back that up as well. He's been very, very good. And this makes sense given the relationship they've already got. And look, I know I've mentioned this on the show before, and I've always felt a bit harsh towards Roberto. I feel like we're giving him a lot of stick, but it didn't work out for him. And you could argue that Pellegrini, would he still be in a job now had Fabianski not got injured? You look at the goalkeeping unit now. If this does go through, and of course, at the point of recording, it's still, I think he's still got a medical, I believe. So it looks likely that it will go through. Providing it goes through, then you look at that as a goalkeeping unit to have Fabianski, Randolph, Dave Martin. That's a really strong goalkeeping unit. So I think it's big news for West Ham. It was much needed. Again, they've got a little bit of a battle on their hands, but you'd certainly feel with Randolph and Fabianski being your top two goalkeepers, it gives them a great chance.
Not too much movement really elsewhere in the goalkeeping department just yet from the January transfer window. However, one signing, Lawrence Vigouroux, has gone to Leighton Orient. Now, we did the Leighton Orient fan show last night. Love Sport London, by the way, Mondays at 9 p.m, so make sure you tune in next week. But he has signed from being unattached. I love the fact that he was born in Camden, but is a Chile international. His last club, Everton Divina Del Mar, to Leighton Orient. Brilliant. I can't imagine there has been another Chilean turnout for Leighton Orient. But he's come in, Dean Brill, of course, out until the end of the season. They've got Sam Sargent there. And the fans were actually saying that regardless of whether Brill had been injured or not, they wanted another goalkeeper in to sort of put that pressure on him.
Yeah, look, to give Lawrence, I know Lawrence very well, he's a massive talent, and did very, very well at Swindon, it's fair to say, the time that he was there. I feel a bit sorry for Lawrence Vigouroux because he's one of these where there was £1 million price tag put on his head a couple of seasons ago from the owner of Swindon. Now, that never happened. And then things tailed off a little bit the following season for him. He's been in limbo, as you mentioned, for the last sort of 6 months or so. And part of the issue, I think, and this is where it's interesting. Now, rightly or wrongly, and I know Lawrence very well, and I've got nothing but good words to say about him, but I know there were one or two murmurings that one or two question marks about his personality. And you do wonder, and this is just, it's a nice, I suppose, bit of advice for anybody listening in that there are certain things that are easy to control. Now, one of the easy things to control is how people perceive you to an extent in terms of your reputation. Are you doing the right things in the gym in the morning? Are you preparing for games the best you can? Do you give absolutely everything you can possibly give every moment you're out on that football pitch or training or doing whatever you do? Now, if you do, no one can ever label that against you. Now, I'm not saying that Lawrence Vigouroux did or didn't do any of this stuff, but for whatever reason, in certain parts, he'd built a bit of a bad reputation. And I just wonder, someone with Lawrence Vigouroux's ability, it wouldn't surprise me if we see him back in the Championship, maybe even Premier League, given the ability, given the size, shape, the way in which he plays, he's got that much ability. So I really, really hope, and if he is listening, and I know that most goalkeepers these days do listen, apparently, which is great. So if he is listening, that would be my biggest bit of advice to him. Just keep your nose clean, keep your head down. This is a big opportunity for you. Go and show exactly just how good you are. Leighton Orient will allow you to play your type of game as well. So let's just see what you're made of, and hopefully he'll have a fantastic time there.
Good stuff. Comes from good stock as well, doesn't he? Had spells with Spurs, I think, as Liverpool when he was a kid. And challenging Zeus de la Paz for the most colourful name in League Two now.
There you go.
Love that. Only a goalkeeper. Not only a goalkeeper. Other people have colourful names, but it's the Goalkeepers Union podcast, so that's what we're going to say.
Let's run with it.
We're ending on a positive, of course. Just a couple more bits, Rich, before we go. Firstly, Will Jeskelainen in the game between Crew and Barnsley. He did the classic case of coming up for a free kick in this one. By the way, he made a great save from a Clark Adua free kick earlier on. But I have to say, it's not that often that you see this. It amazes me how rare it is. We saw it with well-documented cases of recent times. Manuel Neuer in the 2018 World Cup, of course, against South Korea. He came up and Son Heung-min scored. But this one, it was right at the death. They were 2-0 down. He came up for a corner. Of course, it gets cleared. Luke Thomas taps into an empty net. It's rare, isn't it? You don't. It's amazing how little you see that.
What?
In terms of the other team actually going on
the score. No, it's true. It's true. You actually consider how many times the ball does get towards the goal. In theory, if you get a free shot away and you're in somebody's half, you probably should score, given the quality of a professional footballer. They should be able to hit a goal from 50-odd yards. But the point is, to actually break down a defence, even if the ball's cleared, to break down the defence, to have the successful passes you need to get into the opposition's half, ordinarily, it's not actually as easy as you'd think, but you're right. And that's why you still see it as much as you do. And we're seeing it much more in league action now as well, where a team are 1-0 down and the goalkeeper will come up last minute. Because it makes sense to have that extra man in the box to just up your percentages, the chance of you actually scoring a goal by just a few percent, and the fact that whether you lose 1-0 or 2-0 makes very little difference. Personally, I champion it. I think if you've got 5 minutes to go in a game and you're 1-0 down, 5 minutes and whatever the injury time is, I think during that period of time, I would bring up my goalkeeper for every single set piece.
Oh, you love to see it.
Oh, it's great fun. Great. As well.
It's wonderful.
Box office.
Yeah. And to finish, now I love this. Jordan Smith of Nottingham Forest. They were away at Chelsea in a game that Sabrina Mushia pretty much sacrificed completely. I think there were around 10 players who, or 6 players who weren't even on the match day programme list, and that was a list of 30. So that's how much he delved into his squad. I think 5 academy players, which is great, 5 more on the bench. So Jordan Smith stepped between the sticks. Now, seemed like quite a happy chappy on the day, Jordan Smith. They lost 2-0, right at the death, by the way. He made a save from Callum Hudson-Odoi, and there was a big hug with Carl Jenkinson right before the final whistle. But before that, they were 2-0 down, and Ross Barkley had a header that Smith touched onto the post. Brilliant save. Great fingertip save. And he let us know about it. He really celebrated.
He did. I love this. Look, do you know what? And some people look at it and say, you're 2-0 down. Like, what difference does it make? Look, I don't mind this in the same way that often someone will score a consolation goal and they will celebrate. That's okay. It's okay. I think there's also an element, and I don't mind this as well, is that sometimes people don't know you've made the save. I've watched that the first time. I wasn't 100% sure whether he's made the save. The fact he's given it a little celebration, when I've watched it back, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, he's got fingertips. That's a brilliant, brilliant save. I don't mind that at all. Do you know what? We're in the entertainment industry. Go out there, enjoy yourself, express yourself.
Okay, mate, it's been great having you back. Did you have a good New Year, by the way? I didn't ask.
Oh, no, we didn't do any of the niceties,
no,
we did we?
Do
no,
that.
We're not
no,
really.
Too
we're not
bogged
really,
down in Cutler.
We're not really friends anymore. We were just work colleagues, let's be honest. But I did. Had a great New Year, thank you. I hope you did too.
I did, yes, yes. I was at a wedding, wasn't I? So it's very pleasant.
Were.
Fireworks and all sorts.
Fantastic. Yeah. And the wedding was good too.
It was.
There you go.
Okay, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast for another week. We'll be back, like I said, with more episodes of Between the Sticks and plenty more interview-based podcasts coming up. In association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.